The author of the Gospel of Matthew begins by listing fathers and sons and grandsons with ancient names that I have never learned to pronounce. The opening passage ends with these words, "And Jacob was the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom Jesus was born, who is called the Messiah." The establishment for the gospel writer's Jewish audience that Jesus was a direct descendant of Abraham, the founder of the Jewish faith, establishes Jesus' credibility. Like an impressive resume, the long list of Jesus' ancestors gives him an identity. At the risk of being criticized for being self-indulgent, I am going to tell you a little about my own ancestors and my own journey, scratching for the roots of my existence. Perhaps it will establish my credibility. My hope is that my story will inspire you to think about the meaning of your own family history. My story begins when I turned 50. For the first half century of my life, I had little interest in the roots of my family. And there are several reasons. My neglect of family history was part of my liberalism. Liberals, in the words of our closing hymn, move forward through the ages in unbroken line, while conservatives trust tradition. Look backwards. From an early age, I was excited by modern times. In Arizona, I watched the live broadcasts of all the space shots from a distant, exotic place called Florida. The future also meant the melting pot of America. The drama West Side Story was popular in our house. It taught us that those who cling to the old world ethnic ties did not yet understand the promise of America. To be fully American, I should give up any past ethnic identity and live the life of sturdy independence. My ignorance of my family history also stemmed from the fact that my ethnic roots were from Germany. Fritz is a German nickname for Frederick, and was the name given to German troops by the British and Americans in the First and Second World Wars. Given the history of the last century, there was little with which German Americans could identify positively. World War I, World War II, and the Holocaust created negative associations to the word German. Today, despite a positive relationship between the United States and Germany, American television shows and movies still occasionally characterize Germans as the bad guys, as the evil folks. In 2014, when Americans of German heritage are asked, "Who are you?" Most of the time, most of us say, "I'm an American," suggesting that our European roots are in the past and of little consequence. So for the first 50 years of my life, I knew almost nothing about my own family history. While others talked of their Jewish or Italian or Irish or Asian or African heritage, I could contribute nothing to that conversation. I had transcended old ethnic identities. My identity came from being a modern American with no ties to the past. My credibility came from my own accomplishments and not the accomplishments of my ancestors. In 1977, when 100 million viewers watched the television drama Roots, and when genealogy suddenly became popular, I was not interested. I was focused on the future. I found during the showing of Roots on television that it was much easier to get a seat in a restaurant. Everybody else was home watching the program. But then I turned 50, and a primal urge began to stir inside me. Something about that birthday 13 years ago caused me to think about the influence of my mother and my father and what influence they played in who I am. I began to wonder about my parents' parents. What had they valued? What life adventures had shaped them? How had I ended up where I was? Unspoken questions boiled to the surface. Filled with these questions, I went to the public library. After talking with me, the reference librarian suggested I check out a book called Genealogy for Dummies. The book suggested that I interview my relatives. However, my father was an only child. His father died before he was born, and his mother died when he was in his early 20s. So he knew little about his family. I discovered that the Library of Congress had a book called Fritz Family Heritage. To research the family name, I traveled to the library in Washington, filled out the forms, got my photo taken for a special reader identification card. Finally, I sat in one of the reading rooms holding a manuscript about the size of a large phone book written by a real estate agent in Virginia. At 1,400 pages, the Fritz family heritage contained information about 6,000 of my relatives. After 50 years of ignorance, I had traced my name. For me, it was so exciting to read about my roots that I nearly broke down and cried right there in the reading room of the Library of Congress. I learned that my first ancestors in America were Hans Ulrich Fritz and his 7-year-old son, Woolrich Fritz. They arrived in Philadelphia on the ship Elizabeth on October 30th, 1738. It is likely that they came from somewhere in what is now southwest Germany. Now, we know nothing more about Hans Ulrich Fritz. But Woolrich Fritz, the child, eventually married, had 6 children, and became a farmer in North Carolina, a few miles south of Winston-Salem. And there he joined the Pilgrim Reformed Church. At the age of 50, Woolrich served as a private in the Revolutionary Army and fought in the Battle of Guilford Courthouse in March of 1781. After the battle, the war moved on, and Woolrich returned to his farm. But on October 19th, articles of capitulation were signed at Yorktown, the war ended, and the Tories, who lived near Woolrich Fritz, were not happy with the British surrender. Seeking revenge on November 2nd, 1781, they went to Woolrich Fritz's farmhouse and they shot him dead. Today, there is a monument in Pilgrim Church Cemetery over the grave of Woolrich Fritz in Lexington, North Carolina. Reading the book called Fritz Family Heritage, I was able to trace the history of my father's family from 1738 to the present day. I read stories about a Tennessee ancestor who fought in the Union Army during the Civil War, and about another who became a Kentucky coal miner. Those were ties of blood which formed my roots in the world. But what about my mother's side of my heritage? Well, my mother came from a Mennonite background, and I discovered a website called the California Mennonite Historical Society, dedicated to the furthering understanding about Mennonites. This California Mennonite Historical Society has traced my ancestors on my mother's side back to a man named Jacob Harasvergi. I have to check that pronunciation. Born in the Netherlands over 500 years ago. He lived about the same time as Menno Simons, the founder of the Mennonites. Now, Mennonites were part of the Reformation movement, and they were like the Lutherans, except that they did not believe in infant baptism, and they were pacifists. Jacob became a Mennonite. His descendants were merchants who shipped grains from what is today Gdansk, Poland, to Amsterdam. Because Mennonites were tolerated in the area we now call northern Poland, my mother's ancestors moved to northern Poland from the Netherlands and lived there as farmers for 300 years. They prospered. They built windmills and drainage ditches in order to create farmland. My Mennonite ancestors did so well as farmers that eventually they had their own servants in their house. They had hired hands to help with the farming. They had a family estate near Marburg Castle in northern Poland, which is the largest medieval brick castle in Europe. However, Mennonites are pacifists. The modern system of near universal national military conscription for young men dates to the French Revolution in the 1790s. Most European nations copied the French system. What we today call Northern Poland was in the 19th century part of Prussia, and national military service was for 5 years for all young men. When the Prussian government eliminated an exemption from military service on religious grounds, my ancestors moved to Russia, where they were offered land in the Ukraine, in the area where there is fighting going on today, and given exemption by the Russians for military service. However, after a few years, the Russian leaders announced that they would end this exemption from military service for Mennonites by 1880. And this led to the strangest part of my family history. In 1880, my great-great-grandmother and her four adult children came under the influence of a Mennonite religious fanatic named Klaus Epp. And they went on a 4-year journey with Klaus Epp. I found an account of this journey in a book called The Great Trek. As a child, I had a vague memory of my mother telling me that my ancestors on her side of the family had fled Russia by crossing Turkey on camels to come to America. But as I read The Great Trek, I discovered that I had not listened carefully to my mother. It was Turkestan, or Turkmenistan, not Turkey, that they had crossed on camels. My great-great-grandmother and four of her children joined with about 600 other Mennonites living in Russia and followed a farmer named Klaus Epp to Central Asia. Epp believed that the book of Daniel and Revelation predicted that Christ would soon appear in Central Asia. And that takes a pretty liberal interpretation of those books. My great-grandfather and my great-great-grandmother followed up deep into Kazakhstan and Turkmenistan in search of the haven that Epp believed God had prepared for the Mennonites to observe Christ's return. Within a few days after beginning the trip, two infant sons of my great-great-uncle became seriously ill and died and were buried together in one coffin at a military cemetery with two simple crosses to mark their grave. Although altogether 14 children died on the trip to Tashkent, including all the children under the age of 4. In following Klaus Epp into Asia, my ancestors had lost touch with reality. Their reason and common sense had taken a vacation. After 4 years of searching for the place that Klaus Epp said God had prepared for the Mennonites to observe Christ's return, my ancestors finally realized that Epp was deluded. In 1884, they left Central Asia and headed for America, eventually becoming grain and potato farmers in Idaho. Epp stayed in Turkmenistan with a few followers and died in 1913 after he proclaimed himself to be the Son of Christ and the fourth person in the Trinity. Not all Mennonites were as willing to follow a religious fanatic as several of my ancestors were. However, reading this story made it easier to understand why my mother left the Mennonite church and joined the rational, skeptical Unitarian Universalists. She believed deeply in the importance of religious community, but she and my father both insisted on the use of reason in religious life. As a result, I grew up thinking that a rational, loving religious community is very important. A week ago, I was in Napa, California for a family reunion of my relatives on my mother's side. In between wine tasting on Friday and an earthquake on Sunday, I took charge of the program for Saturday morning. I invited Dr. Peter Clausen, the world's greatest living expert on Mennonite history in Poland, to educate us about our family history. Dr. Clausen lives near Fresno and is 87 years of age. He arrived with his wife, Nancy, and his son, Kevin, who is a cardiologist in Scottsdale. Kevin said, "You know, Dad accepted your invitation and didn't tell us, so we got a little worried since he's 87 about him driving 3 hours on his own from Fresno." So the whole family came up for the lecture. After an hour of conversation about Mennonite history in Poland, Dr. Clausen answered questions, and I asked a question that's not really about history, but more about Mennonite personality. Most of us, I said, in this extended family are shy. In your study of history, is this common among Mennonites? Dr. Clausen said, "Well, we Mennonites prefer to think of ourselves as modest, not shy." So in keeping with this description, after the history seminar on Saturday evening, we had a modest meal, and we did some more modest wine tasting. We noted that our grandmother, who died in 1987 at the age of 103, was a member of the Idaho Women's Christian Temperance Union, actually an officer in the Idaho Women's Christian Temperance Union, and would not have approved of the wine. And in fact, a few of my relatives abstained from wine drinking. We celebrated Cousin Jane and her partner, Cheryl. After being together for over 25 years, they were able to legally marry last January. And we modestly reflected on the fact that although we hold our heritage in deep respect, none of the 35 at the gathering are members of a Mennonite church today. I flew back from California on Tuesday. The plane crossed over Kansas, where my mother's ancestors had first settled in the 1880s before they moved to Idaho. A short time later, we passed south of Tennessee, where Henry Fritz moved after his father was killed in the Revolutionary War. After changing in Atlanta, an airplane carried me back to Sarasota, where 3,000 Amish and Mennonites vacation in the winter. I wondered about my quest to discover my ancestors. Is genealogy just a foolish hobby? Why did it all feel so important to me? I think in a constantly changing world, the digging for roots is, in the end, the quest for a stable identity. By knowing our history, we see how the values and ideals of our fathers, our mothers, are similar to our own. The Mennonites formed the Mennonite Central Committee in 1920 in an effort to feed the hungry in the Ukraine after the First World War. And now it is a major social service agency in America. So helping others is part of my heritage. 2 weeks ago, we raised money to feed the hungry in Sarasota. On Friday, with several of you, I visited a home we support that will be used as a shelter for a homeless family. My grandmother, who died in 1987 at the age of 103, would have approved of these acts. Our ancestors' stories of success interconnect with our own lives. We learn also from the stories of tragic mistakes, of the dreams gone awry, of foolish journeys following religious fanatics. We can at times even see their mistakes repeated in our own lives, and we learn from this also. Who are you? Well, you are certainly your beliefs. You are your accomplishments. However, you are also the child of someone, the grandchild of four people, the great-grandchild of eight people, and the great-great-grandchild of 16 people, as we learn more about the people that came before us. We learn more about ourselves. Each of us is linked in a mysterious dance with past generations. In the words of the poet, "One hand, one hands down, and another takes up the heritage of mind and heart. Laughter and tears, musings and deeds, love like a carefully loaded ship, crosses the gulf between generations."